Previously on the Tony Kornheiser Show.
And they beat us in pickleball. And then she offered me an investment to say, hey, would you want to get involved with this? My brother's got this startup company. It's back in 1986. And it was my first year in the league. I think I made $75,000. I go, thank you. But, you know, I got my money all tied up in investments. And she goes, okay, well, just want to let you know. Well, John and Christy Blake. Christy Blake is Bill Gates' sister. So that was the start of Microsoft.
Oh, wow.
Okay. All right.
How did they do?
That worked out for them.
Yeah.
This is General George Washington, and you're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
What a great treat to get Mark Rippon, who was in chatter yesterday with the Socialite, to just sit down and chat with us for a while. Luke Russert is here. Chris Eliz is here. Michael Kornheiser is here. Nigel is here to run the board and do the news. We are at the aforementioned chatter. We're a full-service, for-profit restaurant. We're at the corner of Jennifer Street and Wisconsin Avenue Northwest in Friendship Heights. I got a note last night from Bonnie Burko that this place was lit last night because of the Capitals game. We have at least four more Capitals games. So we hope that people will watch the games here. The Memorial Day weekend is coming up with all sorts of specials here. Oyster specials on Saturday, in honor of the Indianapolis 500 on Sunday. Everything is priced at $5. Certain beers, fried chicken sandwiches, milk and cookies on Monday, because we're not doing a show Monday, not doing the podcast Monday. Come back on Tuesday.
That's right.
There's an extended weekend brunch, and all weekend long, the Patriots special of two hot dogs and a beer, $9. And if you have an active military ID, you know, it's, I think, free. And 20% of all profit, and profit is a great word, is going to go to Pets for Vets, which is a very, very nice thing. Let us start right away. I guess I could start with the crazed email chain from Sands.
Oh, my gosh.
I guess I could do that. And it's very, I thought, very, very funny, the crazed emails from Sands, which starts out, oh, I got the wrong one here. Come on, Tony. You're not very good
you
at this.
You need a millennial help. 1113
text. Got to get a bigger phone.
So Sands, so
make the buttons
okay,
larger.
If you were like me, if you were like me, you tried to time the Capitals game so that you would watch the game. Things that start at 8 don't start at 8. They start later. There's a whole introductory ceremony. There's everything going on. By the time I got to the Capitals game, I was a minute and a half in, and Ovechkin had already scored.
Yep.
So if you don't think that Ovechkin took this seriously in terms of his own resume, you're crazy. There's a couple of things that need to be said about the Capitals. One, a lot of credit to Barry Zwerluga, who after Game 5 said, this is going to rest on Braden Holtby. Braden Holtby has pitched two straight shutouts. Barry correctly identified him as the key player. And Alexander Ovechkin has scored in both of those games, scored goals in both games that the Capitals needed to win to stay alive. As somebody who originated the phrase choking dogs and did it probably even before they went to the Stanley Cup in 1998, and that was the rare exception. And as Barry points out in his A1 story today in the Washington Post, they just got hot late. They missed the playoffs the next year. They were a non-factor the year before. They got hot late. They came up against a great team, Detroit, and did absolutely nothing.
Great ones.
And that was part of the whole choking dogs thing. As somebody who originated it, and I have these rights, like I have them with the bandwagon, that's over. That's over now. That was an era.
Did you feel? I just felt the earth move a little bit.
That was an absolute era that encompassed the Ovechkin teams and other teams as well. That is gone now. You have gotten to the finals. I will sit here and say to you that I don't even think it matters if they win the Stanley Cup. Others will say it does, especially if they go out 4-0. I think they're going to win the Stanley Cup. They're playing a team that was born an hour and a half ago. You know, honestly, they have not played together all that long. The Caps' main guys have been together for a while, longer than the Vegas Golden Knights' main guys. But I don't honestly think it matters. I think what matters is how history now looks at Alexander Ovechkin. And Alexander Ovechkin, he's never going to be Sidney Crosby. He's not. Sidney Crosby has three Stanley Cups. He has Olympic gold. He has World Cup gold. He has Olympic winning goals.
Yeah.
He's got all this. He's got all the hardware. He's the greatest. But Alexander Ovechkin has done something. It was unwise and unfair for me to compare him to Tracy McGrady, because Tracy McGrady never even got to the second round. Right. Alex Ovechkin got to the second round a lot, never got past that. The more apt comparison is Chris Paul. Chris Paul, a great player, honored by his peers, had no particular success in the playoffs. Now he's in a position, I don't know if they'll do it, but we'll have Aldridge on later. Now he's in a position, Chris Paul, to get to the finals. When you get to the finals, it's one thing to win. It's greater if you win, but at least you get there. At least you get there. You have a shot at it. Chris Paul may well do that. Alex Ovechkin just did it. That you hang your coat on that hook. Right. You get to the Stanley Cup. I don't know. I don't know that you can judge him in the same way ever again. And I open up the floor on that.
Well, you made the guarantee May 14th.
I said they'd win
on PTI.
I did.
The Capitals are going to win the Stanley Cup.
I believe I had
so
that.
So you did have it.
Yeah.
All hail the man.
Ovechkin only 4-7 in Game 7, so you don't want to get carried away. But no. Go ahead, Luke.
I went into this expecting the worst. They have been choking dogs for many years.
They have.
In fact, believing that they were going to lose brought me comfort, brought me happiness, just knowing that I wasn't going to get my hopes up for anything. But yesterday, watching that game, like you, I tuned in a little late after getting a millennial fast casual salad.
Can
I ask a question?
Yes, you make it so easy.
Fast casual, is that a term of art that I should be aware of?
We
do you
live
have to
in the
dress
mecca.
In a certain way?
Yes. We live in the mecca of fast casual dining in the world.
What does that mean?
Sweetgreen, Cava.
Yeah, it's better
Taylor
than
Gourmet.
McDonald's, but it's not Morton's.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's cool. But do you have to dress a certain way?
No.
Yeah, usually you look like Saliza. You have the khakis with the button down, and you have your work ID coming off the belt.
Hey, this guy.
Or you're in yoga pants.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Well,
yoga
pants. I do normally wear yoga pants.
Yeah. Fast casual salad.
Fast casual salad.
That's what we need here. We need fast casual salad.
We'll set it out right outside.
We need that at Chatter.
On the patio.
Wow.
But so I get my fast casual salad, and I'm eating it, and I turn on the television expecting something bad, and the Caps are up 1-0. I said, oh, my goodness. And then Tom Wilson, who I adore,
gets in a big
beats
fight.
Beats the living bejesus out of that.
It wasn't really a fight.
No.
It was more him punching a guy repeatedly in the face and the other guy taking
it. They started the fight. Then they went to the penalty box. The moment
it was like slap shot.
It was like slap shot.
Yeah, it was like, yeah, we're going right
him
now.
Him down.
Yeah, my high school text chain blew up, and we all go, we're actually going to win this. The fact that Wilson went out there, gave him the business, walked off the ice, which is great. He has the 5-minute major. There's less than 5 minutes.
So he knows
period.
He can't.
He just walks off. Just walks off. And I go, we got it. And then they pan to Hopi's eyes. Hopi looks possessed. Ovechkin looks like he's on some sort of crazy drugs. I go, we're winning. We're winning.
So
we're winning.
Here is the text chain. It starts with Gary Braun at 9:51 last night, and that would probably be going into the third period?
Yeah.
9:51, is that
sound
right? Yep. And so Gary writes, okay, I guess I'll be the first to say it. O-V-E-R. See you in Vegas, Sanzi. And then Jeannie says, I'm afraid to speak. And San says, stop. Long way to go. Can't breathe. And Gary writes, you stop, you big coward. Your brother's got a better chance of headlining at the Improv than the Lightning do of winning this game. Embrace your destiny, Steven. You've been trying to deny yourself since the 2-game lead of a week ago. And then Sands finally, winner, incredible, in our time, love sports. So that's what
I got. I had two thoughts watching it. One, I was genuinely happy for Ovechkin, who was clearly his reaction after the first goal. I just don't understand.
And that's the classic Ovechkin shot.
Yes.
It comes onto your stick.
He's on the left side.
500 miles an hour.
I don't get people. We've had this conversation about Tim Tebow. I don't get people. He seems like a totally decent human being who's been great to the city. And plus, Russian machine never breaks is the greatest quote of all time. The other thing that struck me is that it's, while I understand their failures, their repeated failures to win, what is difficult about hockey in a way that's different, because I was going back and forth between basketball. In hockey, it's so chancy.
Yes.
I mean, yes. It hits off a skate. They hit the bar.
Tampa in basketball, Bay had an empty net, and the puck was literally an inch away. They could have blown it. They could have blown it over with a straw.
And
they
didn't, yeah. And they all the guy had to do. And so, whereas in basketball, it's the ball goes in so much.
But with all those chances, that's why last night's game is what normally happens against the Capitals. Yeah. They dominate hitting with hits. They dominate with shots, and they still lose. And last night it was on their side. And I go back to that Tom Wilson hit that Luke brought up, and the TV announcers were pretty quick to say this is in the favor of Tampa Bay because it takes one of the Caps' best defensemen off the floor. But I think that hit and that major, because of where it was placed going into the period intermission, changed the way the refs had to call the rest of the game and really diffused the power play potential for Tampa.
This is what happened to the Caps with the Rangers. When the Caps hosted a game 7 a few years back and lost 5-0. This is a humiliating and thorough defeat for Tampa Bay. Now, I don't care about Tampa Bay. But I think this is a great thing for the Caps. And now, again, they get to the finals where I understand that the Vegas Golden Knights are favored, and I don't really understand why. I really don't.
109 points in the regular season. They've only lost 3 games.
Is they have played the least amount of games in the history of the NHL to get the Stanley Cup final. I believe it's only 15.
That's right. 4, 6, and 5.
Marc-Andre Fleury, who we know from the Pittsburgh
he's got cups
era, will be a hell of a wall for the Capitals
I think they're going to win, but as I say, it doesn't really matter to me. Let me get to one other thing. Let me get to Boston and Cleveland. Boston gets to 10-0 at home. This is the third time they've beaten Cleveland by more than 10 points. LeBron James is wonderful. He and Kevin Love are okay together. Love is okay. LeBron James is wonderful. The other players do nothing. J.R. Smith has 2 points in 26 minutes. Tristan Thompson has 1 point in 26 minutes. So when you tell me, Cleveland will win in Cleveland, then tell me how they're going to win Game 7. I think LeBron needs to score 50. And Luke, you said you thought he looked ancient.
There were some cutaway shots yesterday, and I really respect LeBron. LeBron and I are the same age. I watched him play in high school when he was in this Jordan Classic here in D.C., so I have a deep affinity for him. We traject together in terms of the eras of this country, so I really enjoy him. All that being said, they did a cutaway shot to him on the bench last night, and his head was down, and you saw the bald spot.
Yes,
you saw the creases under
yes.
his eyes. And you just go, wow, he looks really defeated.
Even his coach said he looked tired.
And I felt for him at that moment. I said, I don't know if he's going to be able to do this. I don't know if he's going to be able to do this against
Boston. He's
the
one guy you want on the road in Game 7. You want LeBron. He's done that before.
But it opens up this door now to next season. Does he want to go somewhere? Would it be easy riding, which would be Houston? Does he want to be the face of Ohio and Cleveland, or does he go with some kids in Philly? But I think after watching last night, I understand him if he wants to leave Cleveland.
Okay, I think he's going.
He's earned the right to do that.
To Luke's two things to add on to that. One, think of how much basketball that body has played. I mean, it's
7 finals in a row.
Before he was
19.
Before we went on the air, Luke and I were talking about this. He came in the same year as Dwayne Wade, who's done, and Carmelo Anthony, who's done.
Correct.
Carmelo is 1 year older. Dwayne Wade is 2 years older. He has played more minutes than anybody in that period of time. He has made more baskets than anybody in that period of time. He's played.
His playoff games have to be 2 NBA seasons.
It's 2 seasons.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he had his best year.
Yep.
He was indefatigable this year. He was rock solid and played more minutes and more games than ever before.
And think of the fact that, particularly with Cleveland, obviously not as much with Miami given Bosch and Wade, but the thing that struck me watching the game, and I was watching it going back and forth. I mean, I was mostly watching the Caps. They just don't have that much else. Now, you can make the argument about Boston. Their two best players are 21 years of age or younger. But Kevin Love is not the Kevin Love of the Minnesota Timberwolves. He's just not. He's effectively a three-point shooter for
the
most part.
2016,
right.
Yeah.
J.R. Smith, I mean, the guys they traded for, Larry Nance Jr. didn't play. He had a good first half, I know, but he didn't play that much. Clarkson,
they don't have much.
They have, without him,
they don't have much.
That's a 30 and 52 team. But I mean, like, without, no,
without
you take
him,
LeBron,
20 and 62.
Yeah,
team.
I mean, and so it's not just how long he's played,
but aren't
it's
you
the
amazed,
team.
But aren't you amazed that Boston is this far without Kyrie
it's
Irving?
Oh, it's
and
stunning.
Without Isaiah Thomas, and you say, well, Isaiah Thomas. No. These were lead guards last year. No, they don't have a lead
they
guard.
Lost their, they don't. They lost their first. They lost one of their
and
two
Gordon
best
Hayward.
Players in the first 5 minutes of the series
how,
of the season.
How are they?
And
there?
Kyrie is a top.
This is tremendous
five
failure
player.
On the part of Washington
yeah.
and Toronto. Oh,
yes,
surely. Tremendous failure.
And, but it's also it shows you how good of a coach Brad Stevens
He's
is.
Very
one
good.
Quick thing on LeBron, though, I'm curious for your thoughts on. In terms of legacy, does he bear any of the blame because he's very millennial in the sense he doesn't want to commit long term, and because he doesn't commit long term, they aren't necessarily able to build the team around him that they could build if he said, "Look, I'm here for the next 5 years."
I don't blame him at all for doing what he's doing. I don't
Nor do
because
I.
he delivered championships.
I right. think it's
he delivered,
and I think
and
Durant,
once he delivered, you can leave. You yep. can go wherever you want to go.
Yep.
All right, let's get out of here. We'll come back, David Aldridge. When we come back,
that's right.
On the road from Houston, I am Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Policy Genius ad. Over 80% of people think life insurance costs double what it actually costs. Not only that, almost 100% of people think buying life insurance is a pain in the neck. The truth is, a healthy 35-year-old can get $500,000 in coverage for less than $30 a month. And getting life insurance does not have to be complicated because there's Policy Genius. Policy Genius is the easy way to compare life insurance online. In just 5 minutes, you can compare quotes from the top insurers to find the best policy for you. Policy Genius has helped over 4 million people shop for insurance and placed over $20 billion with a B dollars in coverage. And they don't just make life insurance easy. They also compare disability insurance, renter's insurance, and health insurance. If you care about it, they can cover it. So if you've been thinking about getting life insurance, go to policygenius.com. It's the easy way to compare the top insurers and find the best policy for you. You'll be saving time, money, and hassle, and it is free. Policy Genius, because comparing life insurance doesn't need to be a pain in the neck.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show. The Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is sent to us from Jim Lipson. Lynbrook High School, class of 72. Go Owls. I'm probably guessing there isn't anyone in the crowd I've gone to school with either at Lynbrook or SUNY Morrisville, but you never know. I came all the way from Memphis. It's from our Barrio Jam CD, written by our good friend John Coinman with his friend James Invelt, who makes a guest appearance singing the second verse and then trading vocals with me on the third. As for that nasty business concerning Tony's alleged indiscretions as a camp counselor, Jeff Bloom, a camper who had Tony as a counselor at Camp Kiyuma, reports, and I quote, "Tony certainly did nothing wrong at Camp Kiyuma and was very well liked. Please let that put an end to this witch hunt. I don't remember Jeff Bloom. I don't." David Aldridge joins us now, and ostensibly we would talk about basketball, but David Aldridge was born and raised in Washington, D.C., and is seeing a team go to the finals of its league now, and I need to get your thoughts on, I'm sure you watched the Caps because TNT did not have a game last night. What are your thoughts of them getting to the Stanley Cup Finals?
It was awesome.
Yeah.
It was great. It was just, wow. It was so much fun to watch them, you know, and I don't purport to be knowledgeable about, you know, hockey, and you know, I'm not Pierre Maguire,
right?
But just to watch the people out on right by, you know, Capital One, people in Capital One.
Yeah.
I mean, it was great. It was great because the story has been so, and I think correctly, by the way, told over the years. You know, you played a big part in that.
Yep.
And again, correctly. They choked like dogs for years,
and that's over now. That's over.
But that makes what happened last night so much more meaningful because I think even the most ardent Caps fans would acknowledge that was their history. That's what they did, and to be down 3-2, and then to, you know, win Game 6 at home, which was hard enough to do, and then go on the road to win Game 7 to go to the Cup and to dominate. I mean, they dominated Tampa Bay. I just felt great for Ovechkin. I felt great
yeah.
for him because he has been great in these playoffs. And I was so worried that he would not be rewarded after playing as well as he could and doing all the things we always wanted him to do, not just on the ice, but as a leader on the bench and all that. He did all of those things. He committed completely to this and finally gets rewarded for it. Now, I mean, I hope they win the cup.
I don't think it matters. I hope too. But
yeah, I think we all agree that it doesn't really matter.
No, and to go through Pittsburgh, too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah. To do it that way. I mean, they did everything you're supposed to do in a year that they weren't expected to do it. And as I said at the beginning of the show, David, that choking dog era, that was a real era, and now we move on. Now there's another. You know, I even if they lose 4-0, I don't think it matters as much. Let me get to basketball. This is the question we all have. Cleveland, how are they going to win in Boston? Tell me how they're going to win.
Well, you know, if we assume they win game 6 at home, which I don't think is an unreasonable assumption, right? You know, nothing would indicate that they, because of the way they play in Boston, because of the way Boston plays in Boston, nothing would indicate that they could win a game 7 in Boston. I am still reluctant to walk away from the idea of LeBron James not doing something spectacular.
Me too. Me too.
It's just impossible for me to not think that that is possible. So while I don't think it's likely, I can never, you know, not give him a puncher's chance in one game, Tony. We're talking about one game.
That's right.
Where he can throw everything he's got at winning a game and, you know, again, you look at that roster and you go, who's going to go with him? Who's going to score 27 points?
Not J.R. Smith.
Yeah,
not him.
I don't see anybody. But, you know, I mean, it's one game. You know, things like that do happen. Timmy Smith did rush for 200 yards in the Super Bowl. It does happen. You know, so somebody could do it. It doesn't look likely to me. I mean, they just aren't showing me anything to indicate that they have, you know, the intestinal fortitude to win in the Garden in Game 7.
Now, he won a Game 7 2 years ago in Golden State, but Kyrie Irving scored a million points,
and he's
not there anymore.
That's right.
He's not there.
Right. So, and that's the problem. I just don't see who could. Somebody else has to be there for him. Somebody else has to be that loyal second and really have make a major contribution off that team. And the guys that have been doing it in Cleveland, they just don't do it in Boston. They just don't have that performance. And I was really surprised last night. I really thought Cleveland was going to win that game.
I think Wilbon thought that too. I think he really did.
Have some sort of real, you know, real team win where they just played really well and the ball moved and they got, and it didn't happen again. And so you wonder if it's ever going to happen.
Let me go to the other series, the one that you've been covering. I will concede I was surprised by Game 4. I was really surprised that in the fourth quarter, you know, the Golden State Warriors were 3 of 17. They scored only 12 points. I was surprised when Durant, down 2, threw the ball to Klay Thompson in the corner. I looked around and I said, I am surprised. Were you?
I was surprised by how it happened. I wasn't surprised by the result. I thought without Iguodala, they're just a completely different team. And if he wasn't going to play, that was going to really affect them because they have decided to shorten their rotation because Houston's going so small. They are, you know, really limited because of their roster construction. They have 6 centers, and none of them really can play in this series.
Right.
And so that's half your team. I mean, they only had 8 players as it was, and then Iguodala, who is one of the most important players in that small lineup of theirs that's been so good, isn't there. I thought Houston was going to win the game. I didn't think it was going to be that way, though. I mean, I thought Houston would play great from minute one and not dominate the game, but win the game. And the fact that they had to come back twice was very impressive. Now, I think Golden State ran out of gas because, again, all their players had to play 40 minutes, but that doesn't change the fact that Houston played great down the stretch. I mean, Paul made some monster shots.
He did.
Defense was terrific. They play great and deserve to win that game.
So this is the question that I think all of that leads to. Because Golden State had been invincible in Golden State for a couple of years in playoff games. And the fact that they shot so poorly and the fact that I felt they made very unwise decisions. Do you think something fundamental happened in that game, or do you think that it is Iguodala and in games 5, 6, and 7, all bets are off?
Well, I think if he plays, and we don't know as of right now whether he's going to play in game 5, I think if he plays, I think Golden State will be okay. But if he's limited or doesn't play, I think that they are very vulnerable. They just do not have any depth, you know, and the depth they have is, you know, older and tends to, as most older players do, when the more they play, the harder it is for them. They just, you know, 35, 36 minutes is usually the limit for most, even for the best players. After that, I mean, if you're asking guys to play 42, 43 minutes, they're going to get tired. I mean, they're human beings. So they need Iguodala to play well, to be the best Golden State that they can be. And if he's not there, not to mention Klay Thompson's got a strained knee, they're vulnerable, especially to a team as good as Houston.
Were you surprised on the last sequence, as I was, that, I mean, Durant's an unstoppable player. Why are you giving up the ball?
Well, yeah, in that situation, I mean, it's a scramble. You're trying to make a play before the defense gets set. I guess I was a little surprised he gave the ball up, especially because Klay wasn't really open. It wasn't like he was wide open in the corner. So that was a little surprising. But it was indicative of how strangely they played in the fourth quarter. I mean, they just really played oddly for them. They did not play with much confidence. The ball didn't move. They had one assist in the fourth quarter. I mean, that's just not like them at all. You know, there's a lot of jacking up shots late in the shot clock. They play like Houston did in game 3. Which was weird.
Who do you see winning? I think you're indicating maybe you see Houston winning this series.
Well, again, I think it depends on Iguodala. I mean, I know it seems odd to put it all on Andre Iguodala with all the All-Stars in the team, but I think he's that important. It's not just at the defensive end where he can guard anybody without any help. It's at the offensive end, too. He really is one of their best ball handlers and facilitators in that small lineup of theirs, because Thompson and Steph Curry, they're not leading the break with the dribble. They're spotting up. They're running to the three-point line.
Right.
And it's Iguodala and Durant and Draymond Green that are making all the decisions with the ball in terms of where it goes and who gets it, especially in transition. So he's very important to them, and they need him out there because, you know, Looney is giving him everything he's got, but Looney is not, you know, he's a limited player in terms of what he can do. I mean, he's an effort guy. He's a guy that can get it off the glass and help you that way, but he's not going to handle the ball. He's not going to make shots. He's not going to, you know, all the things that. And the other thing with Iguodala at the defensive end is that he just is so smart defensively that he makes really great decisions. He just goes. He just sees things and blows plays up by instinct and with his experience. And they gave up a lot of open threes because they made mistakes in coverage that they would not have made if he was on the floor.
So please forgive me for this question, because I know it's going to sound ridiculous, because Houston has already lost one game in this series by about 7,000 points.
Right.
But is there any way that Mike D'Antoni is in a position to outcoach Steve Kerr because he is dictating who Kerr has to put on the floor?
Well, but I think it cuts both ways, Tony. I mean, for example, I mean, Nene's not playing in this series at all.
Right.
Because he can't, you know. So and so on the other end of the floor, that's David West, who can't really play in this series. So it's both teams. They're both going with short rotations. In fact, Houston's rotation is even shorter than Golden State's. But the difference is all of Houston's guys are relatively healthy now. I mean, I thought Chris Paul was a little banged up with his whether it was his ankle or his calf or his Achilles, whatever it was, early in the series, but he certainly didn't look like it in Game 4. Now, we will see. It's every other day now. So
right.
We'll see how everybody recovers from that game. And, you know, who knows? Maybe tonight it'll be Houston that runs out of gas in the fourth quarter. But certainly, I thought Golden State ran out of gas in Game 4.
All right. Thank you, David. And when you get back, you come right back into the show. But you'll be gone for a while. David Aldridge, boys and girls. Thank you. We'll take a break. We'll come back with news. I'm Tony Kornheiser.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
This is the Squarespace ad. It starts out as English. It morphs into something else for a while. Have you ever thought about starting a blog? Do you have products or services to sell? Maybe you have a business to promote or an upcoming event to announce. Well, the dream is just a great idea that doesn't have a website yet. Make it a reality with Squarespace. Squarespace is encouraging folks to make it, to easily create a stunning website by yourself using beautiful templates created by world-class designers. With Squarespace, the power is in your hands to really make your website your own. You can customize the look and the feel, the settings, the products, and more with just a few clicks. And now we begin to morph. Sell anything you want online thanks to Squarespace's powerful e-commerce functionality. Enjoy free and secure hosting, built-in search engine optimization, and analytics that help you grow in real time. And with Squarespace, and thank God for this, you never have to worry about a glitchy-looking mobile interface.
Mm-hmm.
Never. Because everything is optimized for mobile right out of the box. Keep dreaming, but make it a reality and make it stand out with a website from Squarespace. Head to squarespace.com/TonyK for a free trial. And when you're ready to launch, use that offer code TonyK to save 10% off your first purchase of a website or a domain.
This is the Tony Kornheiser Show.
Tony Kornheiser Show.
This comes to us from Derek Studi in York, Pennsylvania. I know York very well. That's where the National Barbell Hall of Fame is in York, Pennsylvania. I think something like that.
Yeah, when you go by, there's a huge building with a guy holding
10 million
giant barbells. Yeah.
It's after Breezewood.
He says, No. York is...
York's on 95, isn't it?
North.
York is north.
Oh.
York is
yep.
North. I'm submitting this song, Last Call, from my friend Dave Bray off his first solo album, Music on a Mission. He's a veteran Navy Corpsman who seeks to serve veterans and first responders with his music and volunteer efforts. The album is available on iTunes or at Dave Bray, BrayUSA.com. Thanks for all you do to entertain the littles. Michael, if people want to submit their music, how do they do that?
Send us your music by emailing it to jingles@TonyKornheiserShow.com.
And as the weather has turned nice, is there anything we're selling in the shop,
shop? We're just selling you today.
Selling me today?
Yep, just selling you.
Okay.
And I'll buy that.
The chance to have lunch with you.
But that's good. I went to Modell's at 6:45 a.m., which was open, to get all this Eastern Conference Champions gear, baby.
You know what we should do?
Nice.
We should call the Caps, and by we, I mean Nigel.
It's
and
a
we
royal
should say,
week.
Just give us a flag. Give us a flag, and we'll hang it outside the bar for the games.
The organist played I Have a Piano in Game 6.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm.
We have ties.
Eastern Conference Champions pint glass I bought this morning. Do we have some Andre champagne to fill it up with?
We don't have Andre.
We don't have
Corbel. We don't have any of that, but we have apparently some toasted lager.
Ooh.
Oh. Is it Blue Point?
Yes.
They're advertising that.
Okay.
So, Nigel,
I'll fill it up with that.
Yes.
We'll start off with the Nationals. They lost yesterday.
We have two people who went to the game yesterday.
We do indeed. Field reporters.
Luke and Michael.
Yes, with Young Bootsy, I believe.
What was it like?
Let me just say that your son's parenting skills and his lovely, lovely wife, Bootsy, 7 innings, only one cry, which was about 30 seconds.
That is a quality start.
Yeah. Which was not an anxiety cry.
No.
I just found out it was he hit his head on
the
seat.
He bopped his head on the railing of the seat.
I mean, which is cry when that happens.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I got to say, I mean, that was a Max Scherzer-esque performance from him. He was great.
I don't want to embarrass Luke, but he has a soft way with children. So he does a great duck impersonation.
Really?
And he was even willing to hold the boots for him.
Oh, that is good.
Did he hold Bootsy?
He held Bootsy before we left.
And Bootsy was very into the beard. He was pulling
it
on the beard. What is this thing?
That is very good. So it was a quality start for him.
Yeah. The
How are the Nats? They lose.
They lost.
It happens.
This is, Luke and I were talking about this in the break. This is the reality when you are fielding a AAA team. You can win two against a bad team, but eventually it catches up to you, particularly some key spots, which you saw in the ninth inning. Michael A. Taylor strikes out with the runner
Taylor
on first
striking
and third.
Out for the 60.
But even more than that, you have Spencer Keyboom, who hits into a game-ending double play when a fly ball at least makes it a game.
He made it about halfway down the first. They were like, he hits it, and Carp, I think, says, "I'm watching," and he goes, "He's going to have to hustle to make that." Yeah. I was like, he's going to need to take a car to make it to first. I mean, it comes
back to two plays in the outfield by Bryce Harper. It's the best of times, the worst of times. Yeah. Early in the game, he makes a great run-saving catch to his right. And then maybe because of the sun, maybe he just misplays it, but they call it an error. I think it was a tough play, but that gives the Padres the two-run lead.
Yeah.
But I'm glad you had a good time.
It was
a nice
great
day.
It was a beautiful day. Keyboom, number 64. A guy who's number 64 is not going to win you the game in the bottom of the ninth
inning.
Right. That's
the way
it goes.
Tough one.
Do I understand that the great James Carville was at the game?
He made an appearance with his lovely daughter, Emerson. Emerson? And up from LSU, and James was feeling he had a few lagers there.
Good for
he was
him.
Excited, he was excited about the Pelicans still, even though I think they lost.
They're done for the
it was great for the playing. City of New Orleans. And I think the coolest thing about yesterday though was the Nationals did a whiteout on the team flight to Miami. Bob Carpenter and FP in Miami clubbing gear. On the
that
flight.
Picture Look this is up. Amazing.
It looks like they are extras in a Backstreet Boys "I Want It That Way" music
video. Is that right?
Fairly
standing in front of the
looks
plane.
Amazing.
Okay. All right. What else we got?
That is good.
Mr. Tony, athletes and the law. We've got three stories, and we'll start off with maybe the most disturbing of all of them. And talking about Sterling Brown, the rookie from the Milwaukee Bucks, who was approached by police. I'm trying to figure out when this happened.
This happened in the winter.
Oh, over the winter.
This has just been released. The video has just been released.
Yeah, so this is about 2 a.m. local time. He went into a Walgreens, did Brown, and I guess parked across a few spots, including a handicap spot. When he came out, there was a policeman there, and the policeman was confronting him about, "Hey, you know what's going on here? You can't do that." And it progressed and it progressed to the point where he called for backup. And by the way, the whole time, Brown is not being confrontational at all. You know, he's just sitting there and talking to him, maybe not in the friendliest fashion because he's upset he's getting this ticket. And then the police, he calls for backup. He ends up being tased as he has his hands in his pocket. And they're like, "Get your hands out of your pockets." He appears to say something like, "I'm holding stuff. I can't." And then they swarm him and tase him. And now this is all blown back on the Milwaukee Police Department.
Who are disciplining the police officers who have issued a formal apology to Sterling Brown, who is now considering a lawsuit and is backed completely by his team. This is what Wilbon talks about all the time.
Yeah, I mean, with the body camera stuff now, you
start
to see
these
things.
And we'll do this later in the show. This is the thing that leads to people kneeling in the national anthem, which we will get to later.
And how incredible is it that the day the NFL comes down with a pretty
stupid
policy?
That's irony.
This is
and we'll
released.
Get to that.
Right. Yep. To Lenny Dykstra. We remember Lenny Dykstra, right? The former Met in Philadelphia, Philly. Got in some trouble.
Was his nickname Nails?
Yes.
That's right.
Turned stock market genius, allegedly.
For a while.
In 1996, the Philadelphia All-Star Game, my late father was in the celebrity softball thing, and Lenny Dykstra was supposed to be there. And we went to the Home Depot to try to find a nail large enough for him to sign. And unfortunately, we were not successful.
That's a good idea, though.
But it was a decent idea. So if anyone has a big nail out there, send it to Chad, or I'll try to get it signed by Dykstra.
We know where to find him.
Yes. He's being detained at
incarcerated.
The moment.
Yes, so he was taking an Uber into Linden, New Jersey, from Linden, New Jersey to another location. After the Uber driver picked him up, Dykstra wanted to change the destination, and the Uber driver, for whatever reason, was like, "No, I can't do that." So Dykstra did what most reasonable people would do at that point. He pulled out a gun, pointed at his head, and said, "I'll kill you." The man seems like a natural progression of events. Yeah. The Uber driver then sped into a parking lot next to the Linden police station, which is quite smart, honked his horn, and just fled the vehicle. The police walked over and said, "What's all this then?" They did not find the gun, but they did find some other things, including cocaine, marijuana, and ecstasy. And therefore, Dykstra was booked into custody at 3:30 a.m. And then he took to Twitter to make his case
smart,
to the people.
Really smart.
"But I keep cruising. Can't stop. Won't stop moving. It's like I got this music in my mind saying, gonna be all right.
Please go to
Shake
jail.
It off. Shake
Please.
It off.
And get help.
Yeah, and I guess he did spend time in jail a few years ago for stealing stuff from his own house to pay bankruptcy debts. Yeah. So, yes.
John Kruk, Darren Dalton, Mitch Wilding Williams, and Lenny Dykstra. Those 96 Phillies. What a
fun team.
What a, yeah.
His Wikipedia page, I would recommend. It's well worth a read. I'm just scrolling through.
We have one more.
Yes, and the trifecta, Richie Incognito, former Bills lineman, is being held for what is called an involuntary psychiatric evaluation after an altercation at a Florida gym. And I guess this is in Boca Raton. Police received a call from the Lifetime gym about a disturbance involving Incognito. He wasn't arrested but taken into custody under something called the Baker Act, which allows for these involuntary psychiatric commitment for people seen as a danger to themselves and others.
You knew of him in his sojourn in Buffalo.
I think there are a lot of people who are surprised. Well, why are the Bills trying to reduce the salary of Richie Incognito? And they restructured his deal that it upset him. He fired his agent over Twitter. But my cab driver source in Buffalo had told me that there is a long history over the last 2 years of a lot of consternation regarding Richie Incognito. Hmm. He is still under investigation for possibly uttering a racial slur in the playoff game.
He's the is he the Jonathan Martin guy?
Yes. Yeah. Which is slightly changed because Jonathan Martin is walking the straight and narrow.
I just mean he's the guy who was
Yes.
But
and he was backed by the other line.
I'll be fascinated though if Richie Incognito gets another shot ahead of Kaepernick or Eric Reed. We'll see.
It's very hard to believe that anybody wants him. It's very hard to believe.
Yes.
Do you have something else?
Well, yeah, I was going to talk about Julie Louis-Dreyfus is going to receive the Mark Twain Award. She'll be the 21st recipient of the prize. It'll be at a gala event at the Kennedy Center next October, October 31st.
And she's a lovely person, I'm sure. She's a terrific actress.
Former President Selina Meyer.
She's won a million Emmys. She was great on Seinfeld. She was great in The New Adventures of Old Christine. She's fantastic in Veep. She's fantastic in Veep.
Yes.
I don't think of her. I think of her as a great comic actress. I don't think of her as a great comic.
So that's interesting.
I mean, to me, like the Richard Pryors of the world who win this award, Jerry Seinfeld, Richard Pryor.
I'm going to look back at who's won it.
Well, here's some other.
You have it?
Well, I have some of them in the copy here. Lily Tomlin, Steve Martin, George Carlin, Tina Fey, Bill Murray. Carol Burnett, obviously Bill Cosby got it, and it was taken away.
Yeah,
and Earl Weaver won it three times.
No, he didn't win it.
No, that's right. That's in here.
But it's most...
I mean, Neil Simon won it.
Well, he's one of the great comic writers ever.
I'm just saying, I thought you were saying stand-up comedian.
Mostly.
Was Bob Newhart a stand-up comedian?
Yes.
Okay, I just don't know.
Yes, and in the 60s was considered the number one guy. Yeah. Yes.
Fantastic.
Yes. Most of these people are stand-up. Crystal.
Or write their own stuff.
Carl Reiner won it in 2000. Was he a stand-up comedian?
He was one of the greatest comedy writers. Carl Reiner and Mel Brooks.
My point is, if you were going to define, like, she fits... I guess you're saying she's a comic actress as opposed to a writer or a stand-up comedian.
My sense is that she does not create her own material.
Understood.
You know what? But she's great.
You're viewing material just as the lines. I think the physical acting,
she's great.
Is what this can recognize as well.
So good. So we're all happy. Plus, and Wilbon will tell you this, she's the mother of a Wildcat. Wildcat basketball player. She married Brad Hall.
Yeah,
They were there. They were at the games.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Okay.
They got so much TV time.
Just a couple of things.
Yes.
I got this.
Steph
is
Curry
wonderful.
Parent like yep. TV time.
Mr. Kornheiser, my boyfriend is your biggest fan. Blah 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 blah. His upcoming 37th.
Wait, does it say that or did you put that in?
No, it's very nice.
Does it
sign
give the
a birthday
name?
Card. We did. His name is Greg Pera. It looks like, or Greg Penn. It's hard to say Perih or Penh. His birthday is June 18th, so we sent that, and we were also sent a book. Bill Glavin from Philadelphia said, I'd like to present you with a small item that uses a word near and dear to your heart. I saw this oddity at a variety store in the Berkshires, thought of you immediately, and just had to send it. By all means, have fun and torment Wilbon with it. This is a pop-up book, A Day in Rehoboth Beach.
Oh, that's
this
cool.
This is for Bootsy.
Oh, look at that.
That's Bootsy busy for us.
Grotto Pizza in there?
Rash's Fries.
And give it to Bootsy.
Fantastic.
So that's very good. Oh no, he sent the Uranus soap. Bill Clavin's not wearing a sock.
That's not
less, even classier.
Surfside Arcade made it. The Green Turtle made it.
Yeah, in Parma, Ohio. A couple of Saturdays ago, the woman to whom I'm related by marriage and I headed down to the Cleveland Flea Market. We were browsing through the vintage and antique stuff that's being sold. We found ourselves drawn to the booths that had children's items. My wife had wandered ahead of me, suddenly shrieked with delight and called me over. A young man was selling pop-up books he had co-authored with his brother, including the one enclosed with this letter, that's the Rehoboth Beach one. We're sorry to report that when we explained why we were buying it, the young man admitted he'd never heard of you or PTI. He said he'd always been more of an artsy guy, never into sports. Oh, well. Anyway, so this is all that stuff. I do the mail very quickly so that Michael doesn't get angry. And we get out of here.
I just have one final note in the news, in case people are wondering. Researchers are in, and they can say definitively that Adolf Hitler is still dead.
Right, he is dead, and he's not living on the moon.
Not living on the moon. Just want to make sure we clear that.
I saw him in Brazil in January. I don't know what you guys are talking about.
Get us out of here, an old guy. When we return, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to The Tony Kornheiser Show.
Robert Zimmerman. The Paving Minnesota turns 77 today. He's won everything. He's won the Nobel Prize. What have you won?
And didn't pick it up, right?
Is he Hoff-Woff? Of course he's Hoff-Woff.
Did not pick it up.
Emmys. No. Emmys.
This is the greatest lyric ever. In terms of critical commentary, you just heard it. It's the greatest lyric ever. This is Highway 61. What do you have on this for us today?
For Highway 61, not much here. It's just a bit that he grew up in Duluth, right near Highway 61, which runs all the way down to New Orleans. So clearly this was in his head since he was a young kid.
Can I tell a very quick story about Dylan?
Sure.
First of all, shout out to my dad, because my dad introduced me to Bob Dylan. Not literally, his music.
Right.
There's an interview with Bob Dylan. He obviously doesn't give all that many, but this is about 15 years ago. And the interviewer says, Counting Crows has a song called Mr. Jones and Me that is about Bout of a Thin Man. And they say, is that an honor, to be? And his quote is, I don't know anything about that. That's it.
So he was honored. He was honored at the White House.
This is great.
By Barack Obama.
Yeah.
Who loves Bob Dylan. Loves Bob Dylan. Tremendously so. And everybody's taking pictures at the end of it. With the president, and Dylan just leaves. And Obama says
so
to him,
good.
Well, don't you want a picture? No. And he just leaves.
Of course he did.
The other part of that story, which is hysterical, is they had a reception beforehand for all the people that were performing that day at the White House, and Dylan doesn't show up. And Obama says it's the only time in the history of his presidency that not everyone showed up to the reception he was supposed to be there. And then Dylan came out after performing and shook his hand and was like, hey, have a good one.
My wife.
Yeah, no, he didn't need the picture. And Obama said, okay, I get it. I get it.
My wife was a tennis player. Love meant nothing to her. He always uses that line, and it's so good. Epic.
Can I mention one thing about Dylan?
Yeah.
Have you seen the stuff, the new basement tapes that came out on HBO? It was a series. It was stuff that he wrote when he was recovering from the motorcycle accident in Woodstock, and there was just volumes and volumes of lyrics. And T-Bone
Burnett.
T-Bone Burnett.
T-Bone Burnett.
Got all these great people.
T-Boone Pickens.
T-Boone.
Yes. Not T-Bone.
He bought it, probably.
And he got them together.
That guy's won Oscars and everything.
Yeah, he did.
And
oh, brother, like, I mean, he did.
And he said, people were like, the guys from Mumford and Sons.
Yeah, Marcus Mumford.
Elvis Costello, Rhiannon Giddens, all these brilliant artists, and said, here's the lyrics, and became a reality show. Now write the song around it. And it's great to see them construct the songs around it. I think it's available on HBO. It's the new basement tapes or something like that?
Yeah, the new basement tapes.
Bob Dylan has lived his life his own way.
The truest thing that's ever been said.
Does he live anywhere? Because he's always on the road.
He tours constantly.
I think he lives in Malibu, but I could be wrong. Yeah.
So, on the heels of the death of Tom Wolfe last week, we lose Philip Roth. And Philip Roth is one of the all-time greats. Philip Roth is best known. I mean, he's won every award there is to win, and you know how I feel about Tom Wolfe, so I'm not going to sit here and say that I like Philip Roth more than I like Tom, because I don't, but I love Philip Roth. Philip Roth, most famous probably for Goodbye Columbus and Portnoy's Complaint. And I will just read a little bit of the obituary today in the paper by Nelson Presley. Philip Roth, whose sexually scandalous comic novel Portnoy's Complaint brought him literary celebrity after its publication in 1969, and who was eventually hailed as one of America's greatest living authors for the blunt force and controlled fury of his dozens of later works, died May 22nd in a hospital in Manhattan. He was 85. Mr. Ross' 1959 debut story collection, Goodbye Columbus, which, by the way, is a great movie. And I believe Ali McGraw is
yes,
in the movie.
Yes, you're right.
I believe it's
the
Ali McGraw.
The opening pool scene with the glasses.
It's just a spectacular movie, Goodbye Columbus. Earned him the first of two National Book Awards. He would publish 27 novels, two memoirs, and several more story collections by the time he publicly retired from writing in 2012. His lifelong themes included sex and desire, health and mortality, and Jewishness and its obligations, arguably his most definitive subject, given the controversy surrounding his earliest works. I mean, he's one of the American greats.
Titan. Him and Tom Wolfe are, I mean, I would recommend.
And Saul Bellow.
And Updike. Yeah. I mean, there's a group, but I would recommend, if people, one of his later novels, I would recommend people read is The Plot Against America, which is a very.
Is that part of the trilogy? That's part of the trilogy.
And is a very interesting novel to read in these political times.
So I'm just going to read this one thing. A 2006 survey by the New York Times Book Review of the best books since 1981. That was a 25-year period, found an astonishing 6 of Mr. Roth's novels among the top 22. That's like when the Beatles had all the number one records.
No, five spots.
Well into his senior years, he continued to win the highest laurels of his profession with new evocative works. In 1993, his Operation Shylock, A Confession, won the Penn Faulkner Award. In 1995, Sabbath Theater won the National Book Award. In 1997, American Pastoral won the Pulitzer Prize. So, like, he's Hoff-Waff, too.
Yes.
He's won everything there is to win. I would tell you to go back and read it. I hope most of you have already read it. He's brilliant. And let me get to one other thing here. Consequence. This is consequential. The NFL came out with a new policy yesterday for standing or not standing for the national anthem. They were able to do this without the cooperation of the NFL Players Association, led by Demaurice Smith, who is a friend of mine. They were able to do that because this thing is considered just sort of the protocol of the game. It does not require cooperation from the players. You're setting a new standard for how the games are introduced. And it is essentially this. If you come out to, you don't have to come out for the anthem. You don't have to. You can stay in the locker room for the anthem. But if you come out for the anthem, you have to stand. And if you don't stand for the anthem, if you protest in some way, not standing for the anthem or some other visible means of protest, your team is subject to a fine. That fine can be totally to the discretion of the team. Owners can pay the fine. The CEO of the Jets, the brother of Woody Johnson, Christopher Johnson, has said, I'll pay all the fines. Jed York of the San Francisco 49ers, a traditionally tolerant team of protest, has said, I'll take care of the fines. But it is conceivable, and I might say probable, that Jerry Jones and Bob McNair, right, the owner of the Dallas Cowboys and Houston Texans, might pass that fine along. This is all legal. This is the new policy. I'm going to open this up after I just say this. I think it misreads the fundamental notion of protest. Which is, and I remember protesting because I was young once, even though I don't look like I ever was.
We were young once.
You do this in public. You're doing it because you want everybody to see you do it. And there is a calculus here that's very important. Very important to players. Because somebody's going to bring up Eric Reed and Colin Kaepernick. And this is my answer. There are consequences for what we do. And it is absolutely understandable if an owner of a team says, I don't want this guy playing for me anymore. I get that part. Maybe some other owners haven't taken them in yet. They haven't taken them in. But that's the public nature of protest. If you don't understand, the protest right is guaranteed by the Constitution. But there are consequences to our behavior. And you're in an area where there are not competing leagues. It's not like you. It's not like
right,
you're
it's a monopoly.
On TV, I mean,
right.
And you know, and there's other networks. It's no. It's like, this is it. You want to play football in America? This is where you play it in the United States of America. So all of these things have to be talked about. And now the added layer is the current president of the United States talking about this early this morning or last night, talking about people who don't want to stand for the anthem, said maybe they shouldn't even be in the country.
Yep.
Well, that is inflammatory, and he has been inflammatory before. I don't think this settles it by any stretch of the imagination, and I don't understand this, and then I will shut up. I don't understand why the commissioner's office does not go to the Players Association and say, what do you want?
Right.
Let's get a deal. What do you want? Because the NBA has the deal. You can have the deal. Go.
Chris Long, who
is... Son of Howie. One of the sons of Howie Long.
Who's extremely insightful and says a lot of smart things, released this statement. I just want to read the beginning of it. This is fear of a diminished bottom line. It's also fear of a president turning his base against a corporation. This is not patriotism. Don't get it confused. These owners don't love America more than the players demonstrating and taking real action to prove it. It also lets you, the fan, know where our league stands. And I agree 110% with that. This is ultimately a fear of a diminished bottom line. It is ultimately a fear of Trump getting up and saying, don't watch
don't
the NFL,
games.
Don't go yeah, to the right. games. Those guys don't love America.
But all owners in all sports wish these protests would go away.
Certainly. But when you have a video like Sterling Brown coming out, you understand
yes,
why these happen.
Yes.
When you have a league that's majority black, yes. you
Here's
understand the proof. why these things are happening.
Here's the proof.
Correct. So the one thing I will say is that a lot of players – Jim Trotter did sort of an unofficial poll and of players he talked to, and most of them said this wasn't even on our mind right now. And this now brings it back up to the forefront. It's and every player that protests is going to be more noticed than in the past. So I just think this is it's stupid by the NFL. They could have come up with a solution that
go
would
to the players.
Find
common
some.
Ground.
It's not, and the other thing is, you're dealing with a closed universe. It's not as though you're trying to negotiate world peace. I mean, you're dealing with a closed universe. How many people are in the NFL? I mean, it is a
well,
it is
it's
a,
harder in the NFL than other sports because it's more well, moving they, parts. There's 55 people.
But yeah. Tone, my point is there's 1,500 people. This is not 150,000 people that you're trying to negotiate.
Find out
deal
what
with.
They want and give a little and take a little.
They are banning. Public protest. I mean, that's what they're doing. They're banning public protest. You can agree or disagree, but saying you can stay in the locker room
it fundamentally misunderstands what you're doing.
You can march in your house. Well, that's not the point. Right. Like,
right?
Yeah,
that's
disappointing.
But what is the NFL so afraid of? I mean, that's what I just don't get. It's like they're the
losing
big,
ratings.
But they're
money.
Not,
it's money.
I understand it's money, but
that's it.
The NBA has been able to work through this. Major
How
League
has
baseball.
The NBA been able to do this?
Because
Adam LeBron
Silver.
James says okay. Because the great stars say okay.
Because it feels like it's more of a partnership with certainly the commissioner of that league and the players than it does. And there's a much more of like, we run the show in the NFL, you do what we say,
Correct.
Or you'll be out. And I think that's...
And they've been... And Colin Kaepernick...
Is out.
He's out.
And Eric Reed, has he signed with anyone?
No. Owners meeting audio that leaked. I mean, I still read that transcript every now and then.
I don't think this settles it at all.
No, it doesn't.
I mean, you want to settle it? Don't play the national anthem.
Well, there's that.
You know, and nobody wants to do that. But again, and I can't stress this enough, the right of protest comes with the consequence for your act. I mean, that's, you know, the great martyrs in history understand that. They understand. Muhammad Ali understood what was going to happen if he did what he did, and he did it anyway. And ultimately, the public cry was to get Muhammad Ali back into boxing. And he came back a larger hero than he left. Am I crazy on this?
No, I think it is. I think the danger you always have with 32 extremely wealthy, largely white, almost exclusively male group of anything is you have things like this happen in which it's very clear that this is something that they're all in a room like this'll work.
Doesn't
and you need other voices
there. How
do you
not
because
Demoris
right,
Smith?
Yeah. Right.
How do you not place the courtesy call and say, well, what are you thinking on this? And his quotes are you people.
Yeah.
All right, let's get out of here on this. When we come back, we will have email and a jingle.
Yes, yeah, a jingle about Tom Wolfe, I believe.
About Tom Wolfe.
Yes.
Okay, I'm Tony Kornheiser.
You're listening to to the Tony Kornheiser Show.
You know, Tom Wolfe was the kind of guy who gave this old guy something to shoot for.
What I wanted to be was a writer.
And I'm going to say you're never going to find a nonfiction masterpiece that's better than The Right Stuff.
It's a killer.
Because when he put his words in order, no one else could rise above it.
Put it on a wall, never took it down.
The candy covered tangerine flake streamlined baby. Don't forget the electric Kool-Aid acid test. That said, here comes Tom Wolfe. I love Tom Wolfe.
Tom Wolfe was awesome when awesome actually meant something.
Yeah, that dude could write. As for me, I'm just all right.
I adored Tom. I knew I wasn't ever going to be as good as him.
John Fitzpatrick in Arlington. That's just great. Let me thank David Aldridge for coming on with us today. Thank today's sponsors, Policy Genius and Squarespace. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of The Tony Kornheiser Show, wherever you listen to podcasts, including Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Play. If you listen to this show through iTunes, please leave us a review. We've carved out some time for Luke and his fixation about license plates.
I just want to say a quick thank you to all the littles that reached out to me. A few days ago, I opened up about my crazy neurotic quirk that if when I see the auto dealer's license plate frame on license
like
plates,
Radley,
it,
Acura,
greatly angers me.
Jim Coleman Cadillac.
I was just so
Coons,
happy and just it's so touched that I'm not the only one. Hundreds of people reached out. I cannot thank you enough. Stories about how their fathers would take the car back to the dealership and say, get that crap off my car immediately. That if there was a dealership sticker and the glue residue was there, was I'm not paying until the glue is off immediately. One, though, stood out to me. His name is Andrew Frank from Dallas, Texas. Works at a Subaru dealership. And he said, you know, those things are pretty tacky. Not my dealership. Mine's nice. But those are pretty tacky. Then he also mentioned the fact that I carry a knife in my center console. And he goes, well, in Texas, we carry these. He sent me a picture of a huge gun. So that's where else do you get that?
So I keep only with the littles. I keep the plate cover on my car. I didn't want to give this dealership free advertising, but I keep it on because it entitles me to car washes. And it's actually a lot more subtle than, say, a Nats one or a Duke one, which would get my key card.
I just left the Rolls-Royce dealership thing on my car.
Yeah, yeah.
All that being said, I will completely reverse my position if any dealership in the D.C.
Exactly.
area wants to give me a free car. I will keep that sucker on for a long time.
Welcome to the obsession hour.
I've always thought Luke needs a free car.
From Duncan Mormon in Colorado Springs, time to reset the board to zero. It could have been me. I sent a case of my favorite wine, a 2012 Badge Pinot Noir from D'Alfonso Curran Wines in Lompoc, California, without a name attached, and with an email that was neither short or funny, so you ignored it. Or Nigel missed the email, 2012 Badge Pinot Noir, and the connection to the unknown case of wine by the same name. Or Michael completely ignored the email because he intended to make off with all the wine to give it to the wine tyrant. Or Mr. Tony don't read so good, or didn't see the actual label. Here's what we do know. Both Lace and Luke are off the hook. Go figure. I hope my favorite people can enjoy this wine by their sink. Thank you to Duncan Mormon. From
Thank
Neil
you,
in Rockville. I'm sorry. Did somebody want to talk? I must admit that your response to the man in the car, whom everyone seemingly but you and Bootsy knew was trying to scam you, was surprising, as I would have thought when he rolled down the window to talk to you, you would have responded by saying, excuse me, but do you have any grape poupon? Or, well, what did the OnStar agent tell you? Or, just do me a favor, if your car breaks down on the street, please try not to park in front of my house, because good parking is at a premium. From Scott in Grand Rapids, one of the dealers in Grand Rapids offers unlimited $1 car washes if the dealer plate frame is on your car.
And mine are free.
That and the TK sticker gets me free salutes. Eat it, Luke. Oh. From Brandon S. Balker, singer-songwriter in Lexington, Kentucky. Apparently the one point where Luke and I intersect is on the car dealer badges. Pet peeve number one, people who say nuclear instead of nuclear. Oh. Pet peeve number two, people who leave the dealer sticker badge plate trim on their car. Pet peeve number three, Luke, of course.
Hey, nice. You're third. That's
hey,
good.
We got Patrick Reed, Bubba Watson here
exactly.
with Saliza and I.
We're beliked.
Kevin Siders.
Michael Jordan Spieth. Everyone
chemist.
Loves him.
Oh, you'll like this, Luke. Kevin Siders is a PhD chemist in Buffalo, New York. I'm a recently highly motivated employee of a very successful Washington franchise.
Recently, my company has severely reduced my hours, benched me. I'm available on Memorial Day for brunch and the foreseeable future, as I don't believe I will be getting another opportunity in my current gig. I would make a great server for Chatter, well, at least for 2 days until you replace me with the server you always had. Looking forward to your response, Philip Grubsy Grubauer. From Nate Edwards in Las Vegas. Honestly, I still don't know all the rules yet. Hope we don't get old Yellered. I know Mr. Tony likes weather reports. This is about playing against Capitals.
Vegas.
Doc Bradley.
It's a jersey of Flurry. That's
yes,
the point.
Yes, yeah, okay. Yeah, right.
You have to say that.
I'm sorry. I got that wrong. It's Flurry. Marc-Andre Flurry, who's beaten the Capitals. From Doc Bradley in Las Vegas, I guess. If you're coming to Vegas, let me know. I've got some inns at the casinos on the Strip. Inns as I know how to get into the front door. Rooms and food and stuff you'll have to take care of yourself.
Okay.
Hope I get to meet Super G and any others who make it out to watch the long-suffered Golden Knights finally win the Stanley Cup. Weather's not too bad out here. Having a bit of a cold snap next week. Supposed to be in the middle 90s. And me without my muff. Go Knights, go. For years, I rooted for the Caps because of your show. And the year they finally make it, I have to root against them. That's the luck of the Caps and us littles. If you're out on your bike tonight, as always, everyone, do wear white.
Jesus, am I speaking Chinese?
Thanks, everybody.
I came all the way from Memphis. few good lives, but I couldn't save my own. This is my land.